I've been listening to a lot of Doc Malik, who I totally recommend. And what he does is he starts his interviews kind of straight in, halfway through the conversation.
Like they're talking, yeah, so do a lot of people. Yeah, it's a good idea.
And I think starting the conversation, starting the podcast mid-conversation is quite intriguing.
It's like you've just started eardropping in on people, as people have just started doing at the moment. This is the sort of stuff we chat about behind the scenes in the green room, guys, before you all turn up.
That's right.
Yeah, we just wanted to know what Nick got up to in Paris.
Yeah. How'd you get on with Paris?
Paris was fantastic. Paris was absolutely fantastic. We went way off the beaten track and landed in this tiny little genuine French restaurant, and it was full of business people and, you know, little old blokes eating on their own, and there was no English menu. And we couldn't understand half of what was on the menu, but we ordered, I don't know, lamb cutlets and lamb shank. And it was unbelievable.
They know how to cook.
It was unbelievable. Yeah, I must do a trip advisor for it. So, the Paris was really interesting. And we went on the Eurostar. Do you know that thing goes 200 miles an hour?
Crazy. It's crazy.
Under the channel?
Yeah.
And the Japanese, you're only under the channel for about 15 minutes.
Yeah, it's great. I was on that.
Blink and you miss it.
Yeah, I've done that with my dad. It was great. The one in Japan is way faster. Did you see
bullet
the one
train,
in,
yeah.
The one in, yeah, and it, the tracks have to tilt to keep the train on the track.
Mm-hmm.
I'd love to see the speed of that, but I was going to say 320 kilometres an hour, but that's 200 miles an hour, so that's okay. Just what you just said. but I can't remember. It's some phenomenal speed. And they want to build a new one as well. Isn't there a magnet one?
Yeah,
isn't it?
Unlike in the UK, where we talk about building a brand new HS2.
What's HS2?
It's another failed project.
London to Manchester or London to Birmingham?
London to Birmingham is the only bit that's ever going to get built.
They've been talking about it for 20 years and they're way out over budget and everything.
We're the same in Ireland. We talk about building metros and stuff. It's like not a chance of it. I heard that the Moscow Underground is supposed to be absolutely incredible. Underground and any of the ones in New York. There's like, can you imagine that for engineering? A whole city of tubes and stuff underneath the ground. Isn't it amazing? That I always think it's amazing the ground just doesn't just flop in on top of those tubes. I mean, I guess that's why they're circular. Anyway,
I'm glad you're not an engineer.
I guess that's why you've not got a PhD in engineering.
Yes, correct. But I do know an engineering trick. This is not interesting at all for most people, but the way the Hoover Dam is shaped. Did you see the way the Hoover Dam is shaped? It's not a straight. You would think they would just put a straight wall across the river to block it. No. Does everybody know this? Okay. So this isn't isn't interesting at all.
Sorry.
Okay.
That's how you make an arch. That's how you make an arch stand up. It's curved. Because if it was flat, it would
just
collapse.
Flop down. Very good. Yeah.
Did you know, though, that they poured the concrete for the Hoover Dam so fast and so much that some of it in the heart of the dam is still wet?
Will never set. Yeah, that's nuts, isn't it? Crazy. Yeah. So, guys, we are Raw Pet Medics. You will find us on patreon.com/rawpetmedics. And thank you for your support there. We see you all, and we really appreciate it. Anything you can do there. Price of a cup of coffee each month. It really helps us this side. Times are hard and we appreciate it and we see you and we thank you. So thanks very much. Also, you can get us anywhere you listen to your podcast.
Yeah.
So and we would appreciate any of the reviews. If you get a chance to give us 5 stars any of those podcasts, it helps to get us up the rankings. I'm not sure which apps do that, but Nick,
please subscribe us. Yep. Yeah, on YouTube, wherever you're going, please, if you think we're any good, please subscribe. And say how good you think we are. And if you think we're right,
why did you say that?
Keep it to yourself.
It helps us go move up those rankings. So guys, we are talking about worms tonight. It's a lot. We get the questions into Patreon all the time and we try to give them the most likely next show type idea. And worms is a very common one, and we have covered it a couple of times. So now that it's the season, I suppose, although I want to talk to you about that as well. Could I
seasonal worm?
Yeah, is it a worm? Is there a worm season? I'm sure there is. I mean, anyway, we'll talk about that. I've got many questions. I've more questions than I have answers for people, but I do have a little tiny little bit prepared about a new study that came out that I just wanted to touch on and where it led me, tail wagging straight down a rabbit hole. If I could start that as an introduction for it is about worms. Could, and then we'll hand it over to the vets to teach us a little bit about worms. But I started thinking, first of all, about a nice title for this rant. And I was thinking, the parasites aren't in the food, they make it. And I thought, very clever, Connor. But this study, Parasitological and Molecular Investigation of Consequences of Raw Meat Feeding in Dogs and Cats, Implications for Other Pets Living Nearby. And we'll share the link on Facebook and you can have a look at that study. And what they found, okay, to cut a long story short, they have the usual first paragraph. Some people feeding raw claim, you know, there may be some benefits, and then they get into all the dire, dire consequences of feeding real food to pets. So as soon as you see that first paragraph or two, it sets you up nearly for what the findings of this study are going to be. And you try not to bring your own bias. But what they found was, of 81 dogs that they had a look at, 9 of them picked up some sort of parasites. And while we're talking about worms tonight, none of them were worms, as a friend rightly picked out. 6 of them picked up a fluke that lives in cows. It doesn't hurt dogs, but the dogs had it. One of them had sarcocystis. Yeah, very common in cattle. Particularly if you were to Google the cattle in Hungary, 66% of them have this little nasty in there.
So where was the study done?
Hungary. Hungry. So this is where I'm going. Very good, Brent. That was one of the dogs, and one of the dogs had a rabbit bug, a Maria something something. Another bug. That's a bug of rabbits, not a bug of dogs again. So, as in fairness to the authors,
one of the sort of coccidial family is the Emeria.
Oh yeah. Okay. I'm not sure. I doubt it's pretty for the poor old pet rabbit at the end of it. But this wasn't a pet rabbit. The dog that ate this rabbit was off leaving the countryside, which is a spoiler alert. But of the 9 cases, they picked up these bugs, but none of them harmed dogs. But that's not the point. They're still picking up nasties from eating meat from somewhere, but not nasties of them. But we'll talk about that. Here's the point. All those bugs I just mentioned, freezing kills all of those bugs. Okay, so
right.
If you're...
That's the most important thing that I think we should really, really over-exercise
today.
Yeah.
So I think that's really important that even when we're talking about worms tonight, we're talking when this is the title of the thing is from eating raw dog food. And it's like, well, when we say raw dog food, most of us are associating it with suppliers, complete raw dog food. That stuff is fast frozen. Many massive companies process frozen. There is not a chance in hell a worm is coming out of complete raw dog food unless it was made yesterday and you've got it. And like Nick's example, some of it was still defrosted in the middle. And then you'd have to be unlucky. So like, it's pretty unlikely. But that's not to say some fresh animals can have some of these bugs. I mean, you can see in some of the tripe samples, you'll see some of these little tiny fluke. I've seen pictures of them. I've had them when I was a supplier. So I understand that stuff is out there and not harmful to dogs. People are more worried about roundworms, hookworms, tapeworms, which we're going to get to. Okay, Connor, get to the point. The point is, where do these samples come from? I started Googling. I started thinking, you know, this is fresh meat issues. This is dogs scavenging on fallen cows issues. This is wild prey issue, okay? So not a lot of people get fresh meat. So I started thinking, okay, look, this sounds like a rural dog issue. And I started thinking, right, what's the difference between rural dogs and urban dogs in parasite load? And a study of free-ranging rural dogs in Estonia found that they are 9 times more likely to be infected with helminths, worms, than urban dogs. So that's interesting, first of all. It gives us a bit of context. Urban dogs aren't picking up the worms of rural dogs. And as we just found out, rural dogs probably get access to that fresh meat, dead carcass, wild game, far more. You don't see many rabbits running around, you know, Leicester Square. So that is the rural thing. So I contacted the authors and I said, where did you get the samples? And no response from the authors, which is very telling. Because if you spend a lot of time doing a study, you love talking about it. You can't wait till someone asks you. Because not that many people read them and you're dying to talk about your stuff. No response from the authors to my questions. So that was a bit worrying. So then I start thinking, how did you take these samples? Remember in the Melbourne study, they chose the animals that were bigger, and then the animals that were bigger, the animals in the test pool were smaller, and they started making these ridiculous conclusions because they picked their samples. It wasn't random. You hear this word random controlled trials, random sampling. You've got to be real careful how you take your samples. So I started thinking about it. Then I thought, there's no control group here. I mean, you would think that their samples came in from vets and stuff. You start thinking, well, did the vets send in samples from gut-sick dogs who may be more prone to worms? The main thing is no control group. If they were going to get samples from vets, okay, it'd be harder to get samples in from raw-fed dogs because there's less of them. Why didn't they just take in samples from dry fed rural dogs as well? Wouldn't it be nice to know the incidence of these bad guys in dry fed dogs? I mean, that is bloody obvious, and it's so telling that they didn't do it. Because, you know, getting a control group is easy because you're just asking vets for samples and they've more dry fed dogs and raw fed dogs in their book. It would have added far more weight to their findings. And the simple fact that there's no control groups, like, it's a massive red flag. So that stank a bit, contacted them, said, what's the crack with no control groups? So I wonder what the incidence of these parasites are in dry fed dogs who also scavenge and carry in and chase rabbits and whatnot. Probably more so if you're dying for protein. So I thought that was quite... So it reminded me of the Big Tick Project, where the Big Tick Project, that was Professor Wall in Bristol University who put his name to that one. And they found 31% of UK dogs have ticks. And then in the methods it said, we might have inflated the figures by the way we recruited everyone. So I'm thinking that study would have been way better if they just asked everybody what they were feeding their dogs, dumped all the dry-fed dogs, and then just said 31% of raw-fed dogs have ticks. They don't have to include the dry-fed dogs at all. So that title is very misleading. They only looked at raw. Why wouldn't they look at dry-fed dogs as well? It's so obvious that you would compare the two now that we know raw-fed dogs are healthier across a number of different things. Anyway, last little bit. I started thinking there must be some evidence of like raw and dry-fed dogs. Check out this study. In 2016, Nice et al., for parasite vectors, set out to examine the risk factors for dogs shedding Toxocara canis, which is a roundworm probably. In household dogs older than 6 months, those younger than 6 months don't tend to shed roundworms. The overall background prevalence of these infections was about 4.5% in these populations. Increased hazards for infections were, not in any order, coprophagy, which is poo eating, geophagy, which is soil eating, walking off leash, which we just talked about, suffering from respiratory conditions, which is interesting, and feeding a commercial diet. Ooh, that's right. Of the 867 responses, 191 infections were recorded in dry-fed dogs. It ended up being an infection rate in dry-fed dogs of 0.33, whereas there was only 68 infections in the raw groups, ended up being an infection rate of 0.21, which gave a highly significant p-value. And the authors note, an unexpected risk factor was feeding of a commercial diet while feeding frozen meat appeared to be protective to roundworm infestation. Isn't that interesting? And this study about parasites didn't mention it. Can you believe it? They just missed, they forgot to include this key study.
I mean, that reference wasn't in their article.
It wasn't in it, Brian. Not at all. Isn't that surprising? And at the end of this 2016 piece, it said, explaining that commercial bagged and canned diets are a risk factor for roundworm infections is difficult. And I was like, I'll give it a go. So off I go down this rabbit hole, because remember Maya's talk, which highlighted if you eat, if cats eat more omega-6 linoleic acid, it makes them more attractive to whatever bugger was it toxoplasmosis, one of those fellas.
Yeah, because it's more inflammatory.
More inflammatory. And so the environment is correct and the bug goes, you'll do. And so we kind of know that. In fact, studies have shown since the 40s that it's all about environment. It's all about the host environment, okay? And that's what keeps you protected. And lots of studies have been done. So risk factors outside, they found, are the dogs eating worm larvae, impossible and complete frozen raw dog food. They're housing, so if the dogs are housed on concrete, they won't pick up worms. If they're housed on grass and muck, greyhounds will pick up worms. And then third of these, of the three risk factors, was inappropriate and deficient diets. So in the 40s, they've done a whole heap of studies on cats and dogs, on what makes them habitable by bugs. And I thought, this is great. So down the road, this is 2 days into this. I'm serious, guys. I'm going, this is so exciting. Vitamin deficiencies are the number one thing for why dogs are picking up worms. If you want to pick up a type of roundworm called Trichinella, we have all heard of, you need to be deficient in vitamin A. So vitamin A deficiency in rats lowers their resistance to an infection of roundworm. And then there's lots of other studies in that vein. Foster and Court lowered the resistance of dogs previously infected with a hookworm, more commonly found in cats, Anisostoma canium, by giving them a diet deficient in A and B vitamins. So A and B vitamins can make a dog more prone to hookworms that normally prefer to live in cats. So A and B. And what are the two vitamins that ultra-processing hammers out of diets? A and B. Studies show in Bjork in 1983, B1, B5, B12, C is annihilated by processing. storage times. I'm just skipping through a long paragraph. A and B are seen to be very deficient. In canned food, 89% of the vitamin A was lost in processing. That was a study by Mooney in 2010. So A and B deficiency in dry-fed dogs, canned-fed dogs, would be high. And the studies in the 30s and 40s show that makes you rife for worm infestation. And the last little thing I found, so I'm skipping down through paragraphs here, one more little gem that I just want to read out verbatim. Then I found a bit in a study from 1962 which found that all dogs with Toxocara excreted fewer eggs when given a carbohydrate-free diet of cooked horse meat compared to dogs fed starch-rich foods of cereals and fats.
Okay, do you want to just do a summary of your findings there, Connor, just so that if anybody came in a bit late, just summarize the whole thing.
I'll skip the hungry study. Okay, what seems to be the case is that it's very much about environment. It's very much about some animals are prone to these bugs and some animals are not. And we all suspected that. You know, we suspected the parasites infect the weak, the 4D animals, dead, diseased, dying, disabled, the very young, the very old, for all the same reason. Your immune system's completely distracted. You're shattered.
Yeah.
So it's all about environment. But it turns out having a wrong 3 and 6 ratio, so lots of the plant oils in omega-6 makes you inflamed, so you're more prone to bugs. Having a deficiency in A and B complex is going to make you more kind of vulnerable to worms. Higher carbohydrate diets will mean you will shed more of those worms. So there are three concrete findings that would explain why studies show commercial diets make you more prone to worms. That's a study from 2016. And I just thought the very last point is that when bullshit studies like this first one I talked about, when those studies come out and don't talk about all those key factors, they distract people from the true point of what's going on. Science is so interesting. And there, after a day's worth of investigation, we found, ooh, best not be low in vitamin A, D, get your 3 and 6, right? Simple little facts that we now know that could protect you from worm infestation. They blanketed all that away to scare you about eating fresh food and not and I just find that reprehensible. We're getting distracted from the good things to keep us healthy, to focus on the crap to keep us sick. And it just really, really annoyed me. And that is it. So that's my bit on worms that I found. What do you think?
Okay, so my thoughts on that would be...
He's so good at this monologue.
Yes, I was really into that.
15 minutes, mate. Yeah, very, very good.
Sorry, lad. So
just to kind of put this in kind of some kind of global context, I think that the big food corporations know exactly what they're doing and they just don't care. That's my opinion. I may be wrong, but it's like things that have happened in the last 3-4 years, that they know that there's a lot of problems and they're all going looking the other way.
Yeah.
You know, they're all going and everybody's scared to break rank. You know, who's going to come from Mars or Nestle or Colgate Palmolive and say, I'm really sorry, we were wrong. Actually feeding fresh and raw food is actually more healthy. Surprise.
Never going to happen. Never.
It's just not going to happen. Mm. Okay.
Mortgage depends on it.
And these studies that you're showing demonstrates that when you read the fine print, it demonstrates exactly that. They're absolutely saying, we know what's happening. We know that A and B are really good, helps to drop your worm levels, but we're going to ignore it and we're just going to just find a some pseudo flaw in the argument against raw. I'm going to say, obviously, raw is really bad. Feeding fresh rabbits that the dog has just picked up in the field to your dog is not raw feeding. And they're likely to pick up worms because that's the way Mother Nature likes to do it. The rabbit has the worms, and what have you. That's not raw feeding.
Yeah, I think we've got a caveat
if you
on that.
I'm saying straight from the field.
Yeah.
But if you freezing is the answer, really, as far as worms are concerned with raw. If you just want to summarize the entire 45 minutes, freeze the meat before it goes into the dog at least a week in a normal freezer at about minus 18, boys. Yeah. So if you do that, make sure everything goes in the freezer before it goes in the dog. That's number one. If you're buying meat. Don't get it from Waitrose or Tesco's or Asda or something like that and feed it straight to the dog. As many people are prone to do, put it in the freezer before you put it in the dog. Okay, it's got to be in the freezer for at least a week. Because if you put a whacking great, you know, economy 2 kilo lump in the freezer and take it out 3 days later, like the Hoover Dam, that middle of that section is going to be unfrozen. And so you're going to be exposing the dog to a certain level of potential worm eggs. If you see, you feed dogs worms, they're probably not going to do anything unless they're full of eggs. It's the eggs. They pick up eggs in the soil and from feces and what have you. That's the thing. And when you freeze meat, you kill the eggs and any kind of infected
the larvae,
meat.
The larvae.
Yeah, and the larvae as well. Yeah.
So I think, could we just caveat this a little bit? Because we're talking a lot about what's in the meat. And the majority of worms that we worry about for our pets are not in this category of going to be consumed. There's consumed. There are some of the parasites that were in that study, which are to do with coccidia and, you know, sarcocystis and toxoplasma.
Which are not worms.
Which is not Toxocara, Neospora. These are not worms. They're separate, and we're going to talk about those in another life.
The worms, single cell things.
The majority of people that are worried about their kids' eyesight, you know, seizure activity, you know, children being affected by Toxocara, you know, is through worms from the dog's mum that have passed through placenta or through the milk into the puppy are now dormant in your dog's muscle until their immune system goes down, and then they will go back through the life cycle.
Oh.
So actually nothing to do with what they're eating from, you know, prey or anything like that. That's
that.
A cycle within the dog, okay? So then if those live worms, those adult worms, could produce up to 200,000 eggs a day once they come through as a live Toxocara, and they will excrete onto the ground. And absolutely, if you get coprophagia, as Nick was talking about, if you, you know, which is eating poo, if you get them eating the soil in ground which has been contaminated, which some dogs are wont to do, if they eat their food on that contaminated ground, these are risks, but they're relatively low unless you've got a burden of worms. Okay, now those worms, again, you will not see those eggs. So the number of people that say to me, oh, I've never seen a worm, you know, the worms only will come out in the feces. If there's so many, they're elbowing each other out for space. Because as soon as the adult is out in the feces, it can't clamber back in. It's not some horror show. It's not going to, you know, you lie down to camp at night and it wriggles up your nose and before you know it, you're there. Okay. These are dead once they're out. Okay. The eggs becoming larvae consumed are the only thing that once consumed and into the intestine eats their way through the wall of the intestine. This is why the inflammatory markers are important, because the more inflamed your gut is, the more readily those worm larvae are likely to eat through and then get into your liver, eat their way up through the chest, coughed up in the sputum and swallowed, and create adult worms. That's Toxocara for you. Horrific. Sounds horrendous.
Absolutely sounds horrible.
Can cause granulations in, you know, most of us, if our immune systems are right, they'll granulate in the muscle. You'll never know that you've ever consumed them. For the children that are unfortunate enough to get a granuloma in the retina, that can cause blindness in severity. If it's close to the optic nerve, it can cause just a blurring if it's away somewhere else in the retina. It's rare, okay? But it is seen. And it is something that people get concerned about, but they always over-egg it. There's this whole thing of somehow 100% of children's playgrounds have Toxocara.
Does chemical worming clear Toxocara dormant baddies inside a puppy's muscle tissue?
No. It only is active on the active parts. Even some of the most modern wormers, the advantage that these Toxocara larvae have in hibernation is they are not affected in significance by those wormers. So it's only when your animal is stressed and their immune system is down and they hatch out, as soon as they're in larval stage, you can kill them.
Yeah. Okay. So it's not a guarantee that you can clear your dog of this dreaded disease with a chemical wormer.
Yeah. So then we're totally separate now from a raw versus kibble, other than you're more predisposed if you're eating the larvae and eggs to allow those larvae to migrate through the gut lining, you know, up through the body and generate in that sense of becoming infected for your dogs. So actually, conversely to what they were trying to suggest, you are more predisposed if you're eating a high processed diet that's more inflammatory to the gut.
Yeah.
Okay. So I think it's slightly different from the whole meat argument, which if you're talking about certain tapeworm and a very few roundworms, usually, you know, in pork and boar, wild boar, there are a very few which killed by freezing. They used to freeze carcasses in the slaughterhouse, okay, just to sort of make sure. But meat inspection should determine if there's a risk there or not. They do check through their cheek muscle in many cases just to see, is there any signs of cysts occurring? In that fresh rabbit on the field, the tapeworm, which is the most likely issue,
mm-hmm.
in the abdominal cavity.
Mm-hmm.
So if you've gutted it and had a look, you'll see this gelatinous, like, globular thing that sits in the abdominal cavity. You can strip it out, throw it away. That's the tapeworm gone. Or you can freeze it, as Nick quite rightly says. Your choice if you don't like to get your hands bloodied. Okay?
Interesting. It's the first thing that my dogs do. If they take down a rabbit or a hare in the fields, the first thing they'll do is go into the abdomen.
And do they take it? Mm. Do they eat the stomach contents as well as use? Tell me.
I interviewed Nick, you know these guys.
Yeah.
They are they kill deer just a part of wildlife sort of regeneration farming stuff down in Devon. And they feed their dogs on the raw carcass. And so I asked this very question. I said, Connor will love this.
Go on.
So I've got this on one of the interviews. And they use the venison, so they hang the venison and they, you know, roll up them. So they take the intestines out. And I said, so what do they eat? Do they just eat the bit of intestine? Do they eat the whole thing? Do they eat? I'm sorry, Connor.
No.
They eat the whole lot.
No.
Content.
No.
That's
not true.
This is.
listen. My answer to that, because I refuse to be wrong on this one. I cannot be wrong. I have talked too much shit about it. Listen, we've all seen videos.
This isn't me saying it, Connor.
It's your friend of a friend. We've all got a friend of a friend. We've seen videos of cats chewing on broccoli, you know, and I'm like, okay, listen, these guys are rearing their dogs on bellies full of grass, 3.5 kilos of grass, and the dog's just lashing through it in the rumen of the deer. No way. Not in a male fallow deer, not in a male red deer. They're not going to eat 3 kilos of grass. I don't accept it. No. But I am interested and I want to know more. So that's very interesting.
I think they do. I think there's that.
Next time he does it, film it.
Yeah, do.
So that you've got the film evidence.
The whole thing is that everybody says they don't eat rumen contents, and I can kind of go with that. But if they're super hungry, I think they would go for the rumen itself. However, I think they would go for the intestines. Yeah, that's,
yeah, you do say that. Really, I accept that, Nick. What are the worms? What are the, when I think of worms, I think of roundworm, hookworm, whipworm. They're the worms I think about.
Yeah.
These are all worms inside the gut. So where are dogs picking these up from, and what can you do? Brian doesn't agree. I've said something incorrect.
There's another element for those people that worm egg count is on numbers.
Okay, cool. And we'll finish with lungworm. We'll do lungworm for Patreon.
I think we need to talk practical for the last little
third of the show. That's what I mean.
So my experience of because I've been worm counting for the last 10, 15 years, is that 19 out of 20 adult dogs who are wormed or not, obviously if they're wormed with pharmaceuticals, they're probably going to be free. But if they haven't, and somebody said in the comments actually, haven't done my dogs for years and years, and they are still worm free. Okay, I hope the best way to do a worm sample is you get 3 samples, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, send them off to, I use wormcount.com, and then you know whether the dog's got worms or not. That's the important thing. It's easy to look for round egg worms. Tape worms are not as easy to see because they're very intermittent with their shedding of worms. But the big picture is, why use a pharmaceutical wormer, even if you're on a pet health plan and your vet is giving it to you every month, every 3 months? Why use a pharmaceutical when you can just do a test? Maybe you can talk to your vets about getting a test on their pet health plan. Now, that is, I think, is a very, very good idea. And I've spoken to several veterinary practices about it. Bren, over there, does exactly that.
We do that.
Yeah,
so we've got a special piece of kit, the Imagist, which does worm egg counts within the practice.
Wow.
So rather than the nurses having to go boggle-eyed over it, uses AI. So unlike the standard where they used to just sort of like choose a few areas, try and count a specific amount and see per gram how many eggs there were, this counts the whole slide.
Wow.
So it's super, you know, and it just does it all for you.
Wow.
And any egg, it takes a picture. And it saves it.
Crazy.
So all the slides, so everything, it knows exactly what's there. And then it will give you the counts per gram.
Awesome.
And this is why, I'm going to come back to that, why it's so important.
That's what they're going to put people that look at imaging of tumours in tissue, AI is going to put them out of business overnight because it never gets tired. It just has the very...
Absolutely.
And it has the world's tumours to compare to. Anyway, Nick, go ahead, keep going.
So if 19 out of 20, in my experience, and I'd be interested to hear your thoughts, guys, 19 out of 20 are... negative, year after year after year, even if you don't use anything. Personally, with our dogs and our cats and our growing menagerie, we're using Vermex, and we use that just on a monthly basis, and I'm very happy with that. Some people don't even use Vermex and they still get negative counts year after year after year. And so the whole point, it's a bit like kids will get lice, head lice, at some point, or they'll get worms some point before they're 10, 12 years old, okay? That's just the way it is. Do we give our children pharmaceutical preparations in the hair or for worms, kids get worms, do we give them continual pharmaceuticals in order to combat, possibly once-in-a-lifetime event, or at least a once-in-a-childhood event for children? It makes no sense to me, and I'd love to hear your reflections on that, boys.
Yeah, absolutely. We started, I mean, some of the devastating thoughts when you look at sustainable farming and you understand the nematodes within the soil, how important they are, and the impact of having all of that dog feces. People say, yeah, but I bag it. No, well, so then it goes into a tip. And what do you think happens to all of the effluent that leaches out of that tip? You know, it gets into our waterways, gets back onto the land. You know, it's all sorts of stuff. So let's not go down that route. We do offer it now. If anybody, you know, some people want wormers, but we just say on the plan, please bring feces in. We'll do the worm egg counts. If it needs, you know, any treatment, we'll look at the other options like Vermex. You know, I know, Nick, you love Vermex. You work closely with them.
I've worked with them for a long time. It's family business.
Yeah.
And,
I like them.
Yeah.
Love them. And, I love them. I like them,
you know,
behind the business.
And then, you know, if you're not sure how effective that is, you can retest, you know, and that's the beauty of checking, is the herbal stuff that you're using working? And I would say, you know, guys, I'm really sorry for those people that use diatomaceous earth. If there's one product out there that I've seen fail, especially in the face of a worm burden, it is diatomaceous earth.
Yeah, not many people
so
are
just
feeding that. I think most
be
people are using
careful them. And monitor if they've got a positive. Don't assume the diatomaceous earth has worked. Please retest.
Yeah.
Okay. But coming back very briefly, remember, some people will, if they go to an external thing, they'll come back with a negative, but a positive is more than 20 eggs per gram, okay? And some will go the other way, and if there's one egg per gram, yeah, they will still class that as a positive and think they need to use a chemical wormer. And I would say, please, please, please retest. And number two, think, does your dog or cat, but dog, eat vermin or feces so feces such as from, you know, sheep poo, horse muck, anything like that? Because the number of eggs I think are coming through, especially of hookworm and whipworm.
Oh, that's interesting.
Which are found normally in our soil. But so gardeners, beware. If you don't wash your hands and you've got a heavily infested soil, you can pick these up, these infestations yourself if you've got an inflamed gut. But if you've not got an inflamed gut and you're good, the eggs can pass all the way through.
They could be passing straight through.
Awesome.
Taking a sample.
And so if you've got one egg and it's not even, you know, embryonated, it's not gone into a larvae,
yeah,
it may be that it's not actually anything other than passing all the way through. Please beware of those really low counts. Retest. Don't jump to treat.
I love that.
Good.
Wow. What have we got next week, guys?
A week on pork would be good, guys. Pork, Yersinia, a few other critters that... let's do pork.
Oh, yeah. Hepatitis E.
Ooh, hepatitis E. Yeah. Okay, cool. So, yeah, that was great, guys. Thanks very much. We are Raw Pet Medics. You will find us on patreon.com/rawpetmedics. Thanks for listening, guys. Really appreciate it. For those on Patreon, you will see us for a bit on the side. That was great. Love that. Cheerio, all.
Good. Bye-bye.